Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of True Crime on Easy Street. We've made it back for another week.
My car is covered in bird droppings.
Where is that even from?
Where I park at work.
I didn't mean where's the bird droppings from. Where did that statement
come
from?
Oh, I don't know. I just thought of it because I looked out the window. I thought, you know, I was going to mention the bird shit on my car. So there, I've done it.
Yep, you did.
I thought you were going to start with pollen.
That too. I mean, and there's no sense in washing the car. Mm-mm. I mean, I'm still going to run it through the car wash.
Yeah.
There's no sense because it's just going to be green again tomorrow.
And probably this evening after hour after you go through.
And my house is a mess. The car is a mess. I mean, it's a shit show at my house. It's just, I hate the springtime because it's all in the air and it's a mess and you can't clean.
No, you really can't.
So
you're absolutely right. Everything gets more dusty and more covered in pollen and whatever else is blooming.
The sun comes in the windows in the morning. I just left the house and the sun's coming in and I'm like, damn it, I need to wash the coffee table.
It shows tables, everything.
Every little speck of dust. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, if I drug in here this morning, that's why. Because
I've never heard of washing a coffee table.
Well,
you know, man.
I
mean.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to take it apart and take it outside and hit it with the pressure washer, but I need to hit it with some Windex and a paper towel or two.
Is it a glass coffee table?
Do you not have a Swift duster thing?
But when I use it, I just see it stirring the stuff up and putting it in the air, and then in 10 minutes, it's settled back down again.
So I appreciate this. You're going for we're going to get rid of this dust.
Yes.
We're not going to move it somewhere else.
I want to extricate it from my home permanently. Rearrange it somewhere else.
Got it.
So, then the cats come in.
Oh, that just
there's
ruins.
Furs flying.
Cat hair.
And the dogs get agitated, and then I get agitated. So that's why if I look like I'm in a bad mood today, I've had it.
Yeah. My dog's little paws, you know, they're black on the bottom. And so they get in the pollen, then they're green.
Yep.
And they'll walk and I'm like,
you have the little green paw prints everywhere.
Yes. Oh.
Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah. I'm Kelly Turner. I'm not a doctor.
Scott Wright, mediocre journalist.
Katie Givens, not a lawyer.
How do your brackets look?
I don't even do the bracket thing, but I think there's not probably a bracket left in the world. that has any chance of being correct all the way
through. I think there's been a couple of teams that have messed that up.
Upsets. Florida got beat.
Mm-hmm.
Auburn lost.
Yeah.
Kentucky lost.
Yeah.
Now, as you listen on Wednesday, Alabama plays tonight as we record on Sunday night. Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean,
so maybe they're still in it as you listen.
Maybe.
I don't really. I'll watch the final.
Yeah.
You know, they'll have it on a Monday night in prime time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll always watch that. It's usually a good game.
Mm-hmm. We do a bracket at home. Just the four of us, the fam jam bracket.
Like one bracket?
We each do our own. Yeah. To kind of do like a little.
What's the prize?
Internal. We don't have a bragging.
Well,
bragging rights.
Okay.
I mean,
right.
The Turners love to talk smack to each other when we do anything competitive. So we are currently today, as of Sunday. Now, by the time you hear this, a lot of basketball will have been played.
Right.
But as of today, Kevin and I are tied for first.
Okay.
And then Nate is third and Katie is fourth. But they're like a point apart.
Does she really care about it? I just don't get that she cares.
She doesn't care. She does love a good bracket. But she, at the end of the day, she's okay. She's like, whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
You know. So
I have a shout out.
All right.
Carrie Behrens.
Okay.
Has reached out to us on Facebook. And she said she has listened to every single episode. Including the first one. Sorry about that. We're still upset with ourselves for the one that we rehearsed. And just, damn it, we didn't get it right. but she said that she gives us 10 stars, which, of course, is not a thing. But we wish it were.
Yeah.
So.
Man. We'll
take all we can get.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you guys know that we're a big hit in Australia?
Are we now? How is that possible?
In the last month, we've had 9 hits on our website from Australia.
9 people in Australia like us.
Or maybe one guy 9 times.
Well,
we don't know.
I'm just going to say 9 people.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think at some point.
That's probably a big percent of their population. I mean, it's not a big continent.
Well, it's a big continent. There just aren't a lot of people on it.
Well, that's what I meant.
Yeah,
it's not maybe I should have said it's not a well populated.
I wonder what the population is of Australia. We'll look
it up. We're probably so far off.
Yeah,
there's probably a ton of people.
Yeah, because They have their cities too.
Maybe those folks in Australia who listen to the show will reach out and let us know.
I just think about the outback and how, you know,
there's a lot of empty space.
We get that in rural Alabama. Sure. Hard to say that. Not South.
Yeah,
I
know. Yeah, there's like 26 million.
Okay.
Coming up on 27 million.
I was gonna guess 30
million. There's a lot of people on that.
So a lot of potential fans is the way I look at it.
It's smaller compared to the other continents of the world. But
true.
But nonetheless, I wasn't prepared for that many people there.
Have y'all seen, like, there's a viral thing where they take Australia and if you kind of flip it upside down and sit it on the United States, it's about the same size landmass wise.
But people wise.
Yeah, yeah. How many people are in the US? Like, that we got hundreds of
people. We have almost 400 million people here. Yeah.
Yeah, so that is a big difference.
Yeah.
Somewhere once someone told me that in Australia, you know, the maps that hang on the wall in the classroom?
Yeah.
They're upside down.
Why?
Because in Australia, they consider themselves to be on the top of the planet.
I
don't know if that's true or not. I've never been to Australia.
I hope it's true.
They put the maps. They print the maps there the other way.
And I'll tell you this. I swear every beautiful person in the world is from Australia. Mm-hmm. They make very pretty people. Yes. So way to go, Australia.
The South, Naomi Watts fan right here.
South
is beautiful. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So like a compass is upside down in Australia?
No, I guess just north is down.
I don't think the compass is going to be.
Maybe that was on a cartoon. Maybe that's not real.
Maybe Scott dreamed
Scott
it.
Just got here and started making stuff up today. Yeah,
but if you say it with confidence,
right?
It sounds good, which is kind of what...
Maybe we should delete
what
that.
We're about here, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
No. We do our research.
Yeah, sometimes. I've got a pile of notes.
I think there's no doubt
that I did my research today.
Okay.
It's just not very well coordinated. So.
Scott texted us yesterday and basically said he was winging it today, which is not true.
Sort of. Compared to the way I usually do it, this is winging it.
Why do you have so many different types of paper?
Because
there's three. Let me have that. All right. So there's a clipboard. Let me tell you guys what I'm looking. Do you remember the old timey notepad? Your great grandmother had one in her house that had the red line down the middle.
Yes.
And it had the blue lines.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I've got. Three pages of that.
It was the last three pages in that notepad.
Then he has a Publix shopping list.
Yeah. Denny gave me that.
Note. Who gave you this?
Denny, my coworker.
Denny. Yeah. Thank you, Denny.
She snagged a bunch of those at Publix and gave them to me.
Which has the F word on it.
Yes.
And some other notes. Mm-hmm. And then we have
the last two pieces
printer paper.
Of printer
like
paper.
Like unlined paper.
Yeah. Yeah, printer paper. He's drawn lines on it.
That was the last six pieces of paper I had in the house.
And so there, these pieces of paper are full front and full back, and there's two of them.
Mm-hmm. And I know he's got notes on his phone. I already saw he pulled that up.
Got it. Right here.
Wow.
Why didn't you top all this?
That was what I got lazy and did not do yesterday. So, I mean, that is the next to the last step in the process that Kelly is holding in her hand.
That looks manic.
Normally, I would type that up and then there would be some coordination. It does.
I mean, especially the Publix notepad. Yeah.
Well, I thought of it last.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. I love the circles and the underlines. There's like random words.
And you know
what? Oh, and you know what? There's, blue ink, black ink. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one pin ran out on me.
You know what, Scott? I love it.
That is so chaotic.
This is the thought process of genius work.
That
right?
is how my brain works. I don't know what to tell you. It's sort of a hot mess.
Everybody thought Einstein was a hot mess too.
That's
so
true.
There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah.
Editor of the local paper, guys.
I wish I could take a 15-minute nap and not feel like crap. That's what Einstein did. You know,
yeah.
He would take his little
He would power down. Yeah. I love those.
I can't do that.
I'm the queen of those. I can power down and then pop back.
I need like
I'm
30
back.
Minutes, 45 minutes.
If it's over 15 or 20, it's too long. I've messed myself up for the rest of the day.
I hear you. Yeah. I'm the other way.
Yeah. No, same. If I'm going to sleep for 30 minutes, it's probably going to be 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Same.
You guys ready?
I think we are.
As ready as you are.
Yeah.
So we're not ready.
We're taking cues from you today.
I'm a little nervous, but can you tell us, give us a little rundown? Where did we leave off last week?
So in our chronology of what's going to happen today in part two of the Boston Marathon bombing, when we left you last week, we had just found out that the two main suspects had been released by the FBI. That was on Thursday.
Okay.
The bombing took place on Monday, April the 15th, 2013 at 2:49 p.m. It was 3 days later on Thursday around 5:30 in the afternoon when the FBI held a press conference. It was at the Sheraton Hotel in Boston. They released images that they had received from people who were there on Boylston Street that day when the bomb went off. Bombs, plural, two of them.
Okay.
And they figured out from watching some security footage and matching it up with the footage from folks with their iPhones that had shared the information with the FBI, they figured out who they think the two guys are.
Okay.
They don't know any names yet. It's just one of them has a black hat, baseball hat. The other has a white baseball cap turned around backwards.
Yep. And you were calling them black cap, white cap.
Black
right?
hat and
oh, black
white
hat.
Hat. Yeah, black
white
hat, hat and white hat.
Okay. Can you imagine being the person tasked, or multiple people, with going through all this footage?
Thousands of hours of footage. And they even mentioned it in the documentary that I watched. If you have 1,000 hours of footage, it takes you 1,000 hours to go through it.
You
watch it all.
And I was actually, you know, hearing this now and thinking back to when this happened, they had the information about the suspects out pretty darn quick to go through all of that.
Perfect segue, because they did not want, the FBI did not want to release those photos yet.
Oh, okay.
But they found out that one of the news media, somebody in the Boston Police Department, we think, leaked the photos to the media, because the Boston police wanted the photos out. They felt like the community would help. If they knew who they were, if they saw their faces, somebody would call the phone and say, hey, we know who this guy is, who these people are. But the FBI didn't want to do that.
But I don't necessarily disagree with that.
I don't
thinking,
either.
Getting the public to
I
help.
Understand both sides. Because the FBI says, look, once we've done that, we've lost control of our own investigation.
Well, that's true.
We can't.
I get that.
Now we can't creep up on these guys. We can't find them some other way, figure out who they are some other way and creep up on them before they do something else violent. If we corner them, they may react in a way that we are not prepared for.
Well, I get that. You've got people who are willing to bomb extremely crowded areas, and they obviously don't care.
That's
who's
right.
hurt.
That's right.
Children, adults, they don't care.
That's right. Well, it would turn out that the FBI was justified in fearing the release of the photos.
Okay.
So everybody in the world is seeing these images within a few seconds. 40 million hits to the FBI website.
Sure.
Holy moly. What a nightmare.
Yeah. So we know that these two suspects, they have built these pressure cooker bombs at home using, they've gone and bought fireworks and dumped the powder out of the fireworks. And then they've filled these pressure cookers with ball bearings and nails. And the pressure cooker itself becomes part of the bomb when it goes off.
Yeah, the because pieces of it, just like shrapnel.
Yes.
Just,
and out in every direction. And we know now that what these guys decided to do, Black Hat and White Hat decided on Thursday, okay, we're running out of time. Let's build some more bombs, or let's grab some more of the bombs that we've already made that we haven't used yet, and let's drive to New York City and blow up Times Square.
Because every terrorist has always got some residual bombs. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, we'll store these for later.
So you guys have been to Times Square in New York City?
I haven't, right? But I've seen photos.
Okay. I haven't. I was there like it was a weekday in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been there in the afternoon.
It's a madhouse then.
I have been to Piccadilly Circus, which is the British version of Times Square.
Oh, yeah,
basically.
Yeah. I've been there as well.
And a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Lots of people.
Yeah.
It's overwhelming.
It's going to be as crowded.
Times Square.
Times Square is going to be as crowded anytime as Boylston Street is on the day of the Boston Marathon.
Sure.
Yeah, because the time I was in Times Square was like a Friday afternoon in March.
Yeah.
Like just not a special, very
similar,
nothing special.
Like, yeah. And it's just, you know, you can't cross the street. You're shoulder to shoulder with the people walking down both sides of the street, and you can, you know, people out in the street, and Naked Cowboy is there.
Yeah. The performers.
Is that his name? Naked Cowboy?
Yeah, I think I didn't see him. There was a bunch of characters.
I saw him.
There was a bunch of characters.
There's a naked cowboy.
Well, he's wearing tidy whities. Yeah.
And a cowboy. and a guitar, right?
Playing his guitar.
Yeah.
He's there. Wow. He for years. I don't know if he's still there, but for
he
years.
He wasn't there when was I was there. It was also cold when I was there.
Yeah. I think that's part of the...
Tidy Whitey's, huh?
Yep.
Is that a good choice? In Times Square?
He was pulling it off.
Does he stand and
play? I mean,
play?
He did not pull them
off.
Yes,
he stands.
Yeah, he's just standing there playing George Strait.
Or pulled them. Or strategically placed guitar.
Yes. Yeah. So the suspects are, we know now, they were going to load up, head to New York City. It's about 4 hours. It's a 4-hour drive from Boston to New York. It's 215 miles.
Okay.
They had one handgun. They wanted to get another one. Mm. And they also wanted to steal a car for the drive, just in case one of those 40 million hits to the website turned out to be someone who said, oh, I know who these guys are, and they drive a green Honda Civic.
Yeah.
They're not a train. Well, I guess maybe...
Probably concerned
public
about
transportation's not
public
the way
transportation,
to go.
Right? So,
seen or noticed. Yeah.
That's right. Oh, and I mentioned that documentary a minute ago. It's a Netflix documentary. It's a 3-part series, and it's called American Manhunt. It's from last year on the 10th anniversary of the bombing. Mm-hmm. And it's terrific. I've watched it 3 times this week. It's very good. So if you want to learn more about this.
Okay. I've been looking for a good documentary
It's a really good one. You'll learn a lot. They approach it from a lot of different angles. They interview the police officers involved. Mm-hmm. They interview some journalists who covered the story. Mm-hmm. They interview some friends of Black Hat and White Hat.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
All encompassing.
The friends, you talk about the friends, and you may be getting to this and just tell me to be quiet.
Okay.
But the friends, were they shocked? I mean, that this happened. I mean, they had basically
nobody
presented themselves as
these two kids did not seem to be militant.
Okay,
had not seemed that way in the past at all. Very surprised.
Okay,
former teachers of theirs from high school, people that they worked out with in the gymnasium. Uh-huh. It was a boxing gymnasium that they spent time in.
Everybody was, government word gymnasium.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I know. Wow,
I forgot what it was called.
They were at the gym?
They were at the gym. Yeah, the gym.
You forgot the word gym?
I don't know. I told you.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
I told you I'm out of sorts today.
Just sidetrack us there.
The government word. Yeah. Okay, so, and you may be getting to this too. And so just again, tell me to shut up.
10-4.
What happened?
Shut up.
Okay. All right, here we go. We're going to get to that. How do you go from working out at the gymnasium, like an average Joe, to bombing the Boston Marathon?
Right. So, yeah, we'll get there. But now what's happening now is sometime around 10 o'clock on Thursday, April the 18th, our suspects drove across the Longfellow Bridge over the Charles River. That is what separates Boston from Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is where the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, is located. I told you that nobody called anybody after those photos were released. They were expecting the phones to start ringing off the hook. The next thing that they heard instead was officer down.
Oh no.
About 10:30 that night, Black Hat and White Hat walked up to a campus police car. Officer Sean Collier was sitting inside it. He was 27 years old. He was on patrol on the campus at MIT. They want to get another gun. Black Hat has a firearm, a handgun. They want to get another handgun. So they're going to shoot and kill Sean Collier and try to take his handgun away from him.
So they're going to take a police weapon?
That's right.
Wow.
Oh.
But they didn't know that a policeman's holster has a retention system. I'm not sure how it works exactly, but it's some you can't just pull the gun out.
No. Right.
There's a special locking mechanism that maybe you have to hold it in two places at once, you know, with a finger and a thumb. I'm not sure. But you can't just pull it out. They didn't know that.
It's because of idiots like this that they have that.
There's a reason.
Yeah.
So they shot Sean Collier 6 times as he sat in the patrol car. He was shot in the head. He was shot in the hand. It looked like he was trying to reach. He saw the gun come in the open window and tried to reach for it.
Grab it.
And the gun started going off. And he was shot in the hand and in the chest and in the head.
Oh.
And there was a phone call from one of the buildings nearby, a 911 call. Hey, something's going on outside. We heard some gunshots.
Mm-hmm.
Send the police. There's a cop car down here, but nothing's happening. And that's when the call came, officer down.
Oh.
And he died right there.
27 yeah. years old.
That's right.
Gives me chills.
Was he married?
I don't think so. They didn't mention a wife or children.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just a couple of days away from starting a new job.
Oh, no.
He had gone from campus police. Sean Collier was a guy who paid his own way through the police academy.
Oh.
He'd wanted to be a cop his entire life. When he was a kid, he was the cop. Mm-hmm. When you played cops and robbers, he was always the cop. So he sent himself through the police academy because that gets you a little bit higher on the mm-hmm. priority list or the seniority list when it comes when jobs come open.
Mm-hmm.
So he was just a few days away from being promoted. I think he was going to go to the Cambridge Police Department mm-hmm. instead of the campus police there at MIT. So Black Cat and White Hat, they run off without the gun.
They kill this guy for, I mean,
absolutely. I mean, yeah, they don't even get the gun.
Right. But they're already thinking, the cops who arrive on the scene, the concern immediately is, first of all, this doesn't happen in Cambridge. This doesn't happen on MIT campus. I wonder if this is something to do with Black Hat and White Hat.
Mm.
That's the immediate concern. And so now for all of eternity, the question will be asked, if the FBI had not released the photos, would Sean Collier still be alive?
Probably not.
We don't know.
I mean, I don't know. We'll maybe, know. But these people, it's their fault. Yeah. It's
yes.
They're going to do what they're going to do. They've already murdered people. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
I understand that question. That makes sense to me.
There was a huge debate about whether or not to release the photos, and so the recriminations come now because
of course
this is exactly what the FBI said would happen,
mm-hmm.
and it did.
And
the phone did not ring. The other side of the argument was, if we put the photos out, we'll have them identified within hours.
And then it wasn't, and
it
then
wasn't.
They
it was
were
a
backed
risk.
In a corner, and so yeah. almost like when you back a animal in a corner, mm-hmm. you get some
came
problems.
Out fighting.
Yeah. Ugh.
So a few minutes after that, there's an MIT student from China. His Americanized name is Danny.
Okay.
His last name is Ming, M-E-N-G, Danny okay. Ming. He's sitting in his car on the side of the road, returning some text messages.
Okay.
So.
Good. He's not texting and driving.
Yeah, it's finally the law here in Alabama that it's illegal to text and drive. And I still see it on the causeway every morning when I come to work. Half the people I meet are staring at their phones.
Yep. Yeah, all the time.
So Danny Ming is not texting and driving. He is texting
and
sitting.
He's doing the right thing. Yeah, good.
When a car pulled up behind him, a green Honda Civic.
Uh-oh.
Somebody got out of the car, went over to the passenger side, asked him to roll the window down. He thought they're asking for directions.
They need some help. He's trying to be a good person.
Yeah, when he got the window down far enough for the guy to reach his hand inside, he opened the door, got in the car, and put a gun in Danny Ming's face. Start driving.
Oh, no.
That was Black Hat.
No, just take the car.
So, well, they need money.
Oh.
So they drive. Black Hat has Danny Ming drive to a nearby bank branch. The green car driven by White Hat is following. Mm-hmm. They get $800 out of the ATM using Danny Ming's ATM card. And then they drive to a nearby community called Watertown. They park the car, the Mercedes in front, the Honda Civic in the back. And they move Danny Ming to the passenger side in the front.
Why not let him go?
I don't know. They take boxes out of the car, put them into the Mercedes, into the back of this Mercedes SUV. It's a brand new car. It's Danny Ming's first car.
Aww.
He's very excited
about
his new car,
his
first car. And now this is happening.
Aww.
And I forgot to mention this. Black Hat tells him when he gets in, he said, "Do you know about the Boston Marathon bombing?" Of course, he said, "Yes." He said, "That was me, and I just shot and killed a cop.
Holy
crap. In Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
So
Danny Ming is terrified now.
If he didn't piss his pants, he missed a good opportunity.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely.
I know what I would have done.
I would have too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd have already been dead because they would have said, take me to the ATM. And I would be like, I don't have a bank card. and they would think I was lying. And mm-hmm. I'd be like, I cannot get money out of this ATM. I do not have a bank card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they got $800 from him. They load up the car with the boxes. They load up the Mercedes with the boxes from the car.
Mm-hmm. So those, the bombs, are those the bombs for Times Square?
They're the bombs for Times Square.
In the boxes, yes. Yeah.
More pressure cooker bombs and some homemade pipe bombs with fuses mm-hmm. that you have to light with a cigarette lighter.
I mean, I wish they'd just blown themselves up accidentally.
Right.
None of this would have happened.
I know.
I hate to think things like that, but man.
Ming said that Black Hats was the larger and seemingly the older of the two. He seemed to be in charge.
Because they're brothers, right?
That's right. They're going to turn out to be brothers.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did not know that.
No,
it's
fine. No, you didn't. No, okay. but I'm not going to tell you their names until the point in the story when the FBI figures out what their
names are. I don't care about their names. Yeah. I like the fact that they're just generically Black Hat and White Hat mm-hmm. right now.
So the Mercedes is, now all three of them are in the Mercedes.
Okay.
And they're going to head to New York. That's what they tell Danny Ming. But he's down to a quarter of a tank of gas, and so they pull into a gas station. Mm-hmm. Black Hat is driving. He puts the gun in the pocket of the door, and he starts messing with his phone.
Okay.
While White Hat goes inside the convenience store to get some snacks.
Okay.
Load up for the two-hour...
Well, I mean, you know, bombing things makes you hungry. Right. You need snacks.
Load it up for the four-hour drive. To New York City. And this is the point where, and Danny Ming says it in the documentary series, he says, fuck it.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I'm running.
Yep. That's it.
So slowly, slowly, slowly.
Oh, God. I'm just sweating for him.
He undoes his seatbelt buckle.
Uh-huh.
Just eases it across.
Oh, my gosh.
Reaches up and unlocks the door. Mm-hmm. Waits till Black Hat turns his head a little bit, and he opens the door and he takes off. Black Hat almost grabbed him. He said,
oh.
He got a hand on him. But he ran.
Keep wiggling, Danny. Keep wiggling.
He got away. He ran across the street as fast as he's ever run in his life, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
To another
pure
gas
adrenaline.
Station. Yeah.
Pure adrenaline.
To another gas station across the street and asks the cashier to call 911, help. Which he does.
Yes. And can you imagine this cashier like, what? Yeah, holy crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's speaking in broken English. Danny Ming is speaking in broken English. It's mm-hmm. a wonder anything got done, but it did.
Yeah.
And Ming tells the dispatcher, I was just carjacked by the Boston Marathon bombers. Mm-hmm. They told me that that's who they were.
Yeah.
So every police car within 20 miles.
Here they come.
Lights flashing, mm-hmm. sirens blaring, headed for this intersection mm-hmm. where these two gas stations are located. Black Hat runs into the gas station, tells White Hat, hey, he got away, get in the car, we got to go. So they go back to where they left the car parked in Watertown. And now Black Hat is driving the Mercedes. Mm-hmm. White Hat gets back behind the seat of the Honda Civic.
The Civic. Okay. No snacks, I hope. Yeah. I hope he didn't get any snacks.
No snacks. Danny Ming has described his car, of course. Mm-hmm. And he has described the green Honda Civic. And I told you that it was Danny Ming's first car. Mm-hmm. And he's from MIT. And he's from China. He's a pretty smart guy, right?
Sure.
So he has the GPS number for his car memorized. He knows it.
Wow. That is, no one knows that.
I couldn't tell you my license plate if you put a gun to my head.
Way to go, Danny. Yeah.
I was just sitting here trying to think if I could know, if I would know my license plate number.
I could get close. But
I could get close too, but
I don't know it. But you know what? We're all three going to learn it today. We're going to learn our license plate numbers today, the three of us. That's homework for next week for the three of us.
Everybody out there.
Everybody
listening.
Do it. You never know when
it might come
in handy.
Memorize your license plate because police can find cars. Mm-hmm. They can find cars quicker than they can find people. Yep.
Yes, because all the cameras now, mm-hmm. like you just, they can pull and they can find a car.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And this was one of those stories that when you watch the documentary on Netflix, you will see there's a lot of recreated footage that they use, but it's based on footage that they had available to them. Mm-hmm. From folks with iPhones. Mm-hmm. Everybody had an iPhone by 2013, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's when I got my first one.
Yeah, and there's a lot of security cameras on the streets, especially big cities like Boston, college campuses. So a lot of footage was available to help solve this case.
Yeah, because this area is heavily populated with college campuses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the northeastern United States in general, in Massachusetts very specifically, in Cambridge, Boston University, MIT. Boston College. Mm-hmm.
Harvard.
Harvard. Forgot Harvard. How do you forget Harvard?
I don't know, Scott. Don't
know. So within minutes, this all-point bulletin goes out. The car has been found. It's in Watertown still. Slowly driving through the streets. And it's not long at all before a cop happens upon them. I know where that is. I'm going to run over there. No lights, but he gets behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And before he gets behind him, he meets them on the street. And the two cars are going very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And he made eye contact with Black Hat as they passed each other.
And did he say, "I'm coming for you"?
Maybe he did in his head, but he didn't scream it out the window. Yeah,
he didn't scream it out the window.
He turned around and followed them.
Okay.
And but he's not. He still hasn't hit the lights yet because they're talking to the other department officers. And
he needs backup.
Wait until we get some backup.
He can't do this alone.
Yeah.
There's two of them and two vehicles. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're behind him. They're just about ready to the two cars turn onto Laurel Street. In Watertown.
Is this when they're in the suburb, like the little residential area?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
And that's when all hell breaks loose.
Yeah. Okay.
And we'll tell you about that right after these words from our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you in part by A&W Outdoor Services, located right here in Cherokee County, Alabama. It's almost time to tidy up the deck, clean the gutters, and spruce up the yard and landscaping around your home, lake house, or creekside cabin. And who better to do that for you than the professional crew at A&W Outdoor Services? Call 256-706-7964 and let Alan and his crew do all the hard work for you so you can spend your time this summer enjoying your piece of Cherokee County in clean, carefree comfort. Call Alan today for a free estimate or to get on the A&W spring schedule before it's full. That's A&W Outdoor Services at 256-706-7964.
Hey guys, do you know what time it is?
Tell us!
It's time to plan your best vacation ever, right here in beautiful Cherokee County, Alabama.
Many outdoor adventures await. You can wet a hook in beautiful Weiss Lake, swing away at Cherokee Pines Golf Club, climb to the best year-round at Cherokee Rock Village, hike the Little River Canyon National Preserve, take a days-long splash at Pirates Bay Water Park, and there's so much more.
The Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce and Tourism has a full list of recommended lodging facilities, RV sites, and campgrounds, and they're all set up to suit your vacation needs, whatever they may be.
So come see us from wherever you are located. And if you already live right here in Cherokee County, then plan your summer staycation with the Chamber by visiting cherokee-chamber.org.
As always, thank you to all of our wonderful sponsors. Okay, Scott, where were we?
We're on Laurel Street in Watertown.
Yes. Yep, and all hell has broken loose.
It's about to.
And okay. This is residential.
Yeah, this is a residential neighborhood in Watertown, which is a town that is just adjacent, about 15,000 people in Watertown, but adjacent to the Boston metropolitan area.
Would you say it's just like a area. Boston suburb?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Its own municipality, but it's right there. It's okay. You know, from one street to the next, you would know you had changed towns.
Okay.
So we've got the green Honda Civic and the black Mercedes. They've both pulled over and stopped when the officer got some backup behind him. So there's two cop cars. They hit their blue lights, pulled them over.
Okay.
Before the officers can even get out of the car, Black Hat gets out of the black Mercedes and starts firing his weapon at the police officers.
Of course he does.
Last ditch effort. I mean, what else?
Yeah.
The first thing that happens is the windshield shatters into one of the officers' laps.
Oh, gosh.
So he hits reverse. They back up and reassess the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they do as they're being fired upon, they're returning fire.
Mm-hmm.
The officers fired, officers on the scene at this incident that night fired 210 bullets.
Dang. Holy, in a suburb.
Yeah. In a crowded city area with residential homes lining both sides of the street.
Oh my gosh.
That's just the police officers, 210 bullets.
And they've got this maniac that's just,
it's firing away.
Yeah.
So, at one point, one of the officers, one of the first officers who has responded, who was there for the traffic stop, he reaches into his car and knocks it into gear, and he just walks along beside it as it rolls down the middle of the street towards the Mercedes.
So he's kind of using it as a barrier. I think that's what you were going to say.
Yeah, no, yeah.
As a shield. Yeah. He's just keeping the car between him and the the gun. Just about that time, he hears a ting, 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 ting down the street. And then kaboom, there's an explosion. Their white hat is throwing some of their homemade pipe bombs.
Oh, gosh.
In their general direction.
Oh, crap.
There's at least one pressure cooker bomb. The pressure cooker bomb that was headed for Times Square gets thrown into the middle of the street. And luckily, one of the hinges on the top of the pressure cooker came unattached when it hit the ground. And it didn't come up to pressure like it would have. And so the bomb wasn't very effective, but it made a hell of a noise.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And one of the officers said later, if that other hinge hadn't come loose, we would have all been injured because we were inside the blast zone.
Oh, yeah.
Where it landed.
Yeah.
So, kaboom. Explosions. Mm-hmm. Blue lights. Cop cars. People sticking their head out their door going, hey, what's going on out here? And the cops are screaming, get back inside.
Get back inside. Yeah,
don't stick your head out the door.
Don't get near the windows.
One guy three times, the police officer in the documentary said, I had to tell him three times to get his ass back in the house.
What?
He said, unless you've got 40 caliber ammunition, you can't help me.
Sir, what was he just wanting to be helpful?
Yeah, yeah. He's like, hey, what do you need? What can we help? Sure, he's trying to be helpful.
He's trying to be helpful. Yeah,
this isn't Alabama. He probably doesn't have machine gun in there.
He's not like the crotchety old man that keeps yelling, get off my lawn while all this is happening. Yeah. He's actually wanting to help. Hey, here in Alabama, it's like, here you go.
Yeah.
Somebody, hey.
And bullets are flying all through the air.
Mm-hmm.
There's one cop who gets there a little bit later after this has already started. And so he decides he's going to jump over a couple of fences and try to outflank the guys and try to get behind the black Mercedes. Mm-hmm. One family is sitting in their home watching this happen on TV right outside on the street when a bullet pierces their TV screen.
Oh, holy crap.
The stop signs, houses, there's bullet holes everywhere.
So here's, let me just connect.
Denny Ming's Mercedes is destroyed.
Of course. Aww, bless it. I'm sorry. Yeah. But public service announcement. If something like this is going on outside your home, don't sit in your living room and watch television.
If you've got a basement, go get in it.
I mean, go hide. Your bullets pierce.
Back corner of the house. Wait, away.
Yeah. As far away as you can get. As low to the ground as you can get.
I mean, they were aware it was happening outside, weren't they?
Yeah.
They're still watching it on TV. Yeah. Come on, guys.
And there's a sea of police cars headed this way. I mean, you've got police officers leaving the scene of Sean Collier's death.
Mm-hmm. Barricade yourself in your home and hide.
They're headed to Watertown. And they know when the bombs start flying, hey, we've got, before the word has had a chance to get to the officers on the scene, that Danny Ming has already identified these two as the Boston Marathon bombers. The guys on the scene are starting to figure out, hey, wait a minute. They have bombs. This is not a couple of kids hijacking a car.
No,
so they start to figure out what they're dealing with.
These are terrorists.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't care how old they are. They're terrorists.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one of these cops, the one that's going to try to outflank Black Hat and White Hat, at one point, and he was a firearms instructor. And he's rounded the corner of this house. He's just 20 feet away from Black Hat, firing at him. He's like, I know I hit the guy. Mm-hmm. No reaction from the guy. I mean, I'm sure the adrenaline is flowing for Black Hat as well as it is for the officers. But he shoots him 9 times. Never goes down.
Wait a minute. The officer shoots Black Hat 9 times?
That's right. He fired 9 shots.
Oh, he fires. Okay.
But he's a firearms instructor, you would think.
But they don't seem to be connecting.
That's right.
With the target.
And so finally, they're walking towards each other, firing their gun at each other. They end up about 6 feet apart, and they both run out of bullets, and Black Hat looks at his gun, looks at the officer. They made eye contact. He threw the weapon, hit the officer in the shoulder.
Okay.
And tried to take off running back in the other direction, and that's when several police officers got him in the middle of the street and surrounded him and got him down on the ground.
This is older brother Black
Hat. This is Black Hat older brother.
Okay.
Then he's the one who used to be a boxer, and he is violently resistant.
Oh, yeah.
And he's 26 years old. He's in pretty good shape. So they're hitting him with their guns. He's
not a small dude.
No, big guy.
And he's a tough dude.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Probably 6 feet, 200 pounds. Mm-hmm.
But muscle. Very muscle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 26 years old. He worked out at the gym. He's a former boxer.
Yeah.
And that's part of, we'll get to that in a minute. But so they've got him on the ground. In the confusion, everybody has forgotten about White Hat.
Oh, gosh. There's another one, yeah.
White Hat runs and gets into the Mercedes.
Okay.
And guns the engine, and he heads straight for the officers in the middle of the street.
Oh. Wait a minute. Does he know that his brother's on the ground?
I don't think so. Or I don't know.
I mean,
maybe he thinks his brother's dead already.
We see. Okay. All right.
But the cops are trying to get handcuffs on Black Cat.
Okay.
They see the Mercedes coming and they're trying to pull Black Cat out of the street, but they can't get him out of the way in time.
Mm-hmm. They're still trying to pull him. They don't just desert him. They're still trying
They're trying to save themselves, but hey, but they're bring also this guy bringing, with us.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't get him out of the way. And White Hat runs over his brother in the Mercedes, drags him about 20 feet down the street. Kelly, didn't you tell me you've seen the autopsy photo?
Unfortunately, yeah. I have. Yeah.
So, I mean, his body is, he's pretty horribly mangled.
It's awful. Yeah.
Ripped apart, ripped open. It's bad.
Because when I first saw it, I thought, they beat the absolute crap out of this guy.
Right.
But no, it was the car and the road did that. Yeah.
So White Hat crashes the Mercedes into a police car, backs up, gets away. I don't know why nobody chased after him in their own car. Maybe all their cars had been rendered useless by the weapons fire. But nobody chases after the guy. He gets away.
White Hat
is gone.
Is gone in the Mercedes.
That's right.
Okay.
And he drives a few blocks away. We figure out later. Abandons the car and disappears into the night.
Oh. I mean, he's killed his own brother.
That's right.
Does he know that? Does he realize? Surely he does.
I don't think he does because later on he asks where his brother is after he is finally captured. And that's the story we're about to tell you. But I don't think he realized what he had done.
Okay. Because it's a dark night on this street and he's just... full of adrenaline.
Panicked, trying to get away.
Trying to get
away. Bullets are flying.
Mm-hmm.
Bullet holes everywhere.
But also, instead of trying to get away, trying to take out as many cops as he can in the process. Let's just be clear about that.
Yeah. Sure seemed like that.
Yeah.
And so what happens now is the largest manhunt in FBI history.
Really?
Is about to be underway.
It is the largest one.
It's big.
Wow.
I mean, if you've seen this, if you watch the documentary, there are hundreds of cop cars everywhere. They're all converging on Watertown.
I remember seeing footage of this when all this was
I remember unfolding. The day that it happened. I mean, I remember it was on the news. It was on every TV channel. Everybody had Wolf Blitzer and CNN.
It was constant coverage. Yeah.
All the big names were there. They all relocated to this area and did their reports live on the side of the street. Now, finally, we know the names of both of the Boston Marathon bombers, because when they get Black Hat's dead body to the hospital, they take his fingerprints and they run it through the criminal database or all of the databases that are available. And they figure out that he is 26-year-old Tamerlan Tsarnaev.
Okay.
And they now can confirm that the other suspect, White Hat, is his 19-year-old brother, Zokar Tsarnaev.
Okay.
So we finally have names to go with these faces that have been out for less than a day now.
I mean,
they released the pictures at 5:30 on Thursday. This is after midnight into early Friday morning on April the 19th.
Okay. So how come they're getting a hit in the database? Are you getting to that?
Well, it turns out that the FBI knew who Tamerlan Tsarnaev was. They had investigated him several years before, and we don't really know why, and the FBI isn't saying much about that.
Mm, but something
put
a target on him.
Yeah, and I'm not even... There's one of the rabbit holes that I'm going to skip over.
Okay.
I'm going to step way over this one, because... 2 years before, a year and a half before, on September the 11th of 2011, the 10-year anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, three college students were killed in an apartment in Waltham, which is another suburb of Boston, I guess, another nearby town. And Tamerlan Tsarnaev was best friends with one of those kids that was killed. The suspicion is that he might have had something to do with that.
Mm.
I'm not sure how that connects to
testing out some of his bombs or
No. This was something different. This was these three kids were they were killed with a knife.
Oh, with a knife.
Yeah, they were according to the documentary, they were practically decapitated.
Oh my Lord.
And it was an execution style killing. They were all lined up like they had been held at gunpoint, on your knees, hands behind your back. And they were systematically.
And they suspected him of this, but couldn't tie him to it.
I don't know how suspicious they were of him before, but after all of this happened in April of 2013, everybody's looking back at this thing that happened a year and a half before that was one of his best friends. And now he's become this radicalized Muslim terrorist, which is what Tamerlan and his brother and their family, they came to America.
Okay.
About 10 or 11 years before this, early 2000s.
From where?
From one of those stan countries in Europe that needs to get on Wheel of Fortune and buy a vowel.
I gotcha. Okay.
Kyrgyzstan, I think.
Okay.
Kazakhstan?
No, it's a different one. Is it like Kyrgyzik.
I don't know that.
K-R-Y-Z-G, I don't know, Kyrgyzstan.
Where is it near?
It's in Asia. It's in the middle of Asia. It's part of Russia.
Okay.
But it's probably near China. Okay. In that area, the lower areas, I'm not sure exactly.
Is this pre 9/11 that they come to the U.S.?
It would have been after, I think it was 2002. It would have been the year after. But they lived in a part of the world where it was a repressive place to live if you were a Muslim living in this part of Russia.
Okay. They didn't like Muslim in their belief.
It goes
basically
all,
the Muslim. Yeah. They were like, no.
The reason those people were there had been relocated there from another part of Russia. It goes all the way back to Joseph Stalin and World War II.
Okay.
But because of where they lived and what their ethnicity was and their heritage, they were allowed, people from that part of the country were allowed to move to the United States and as refugees.
Okay.
And receive government assistance and be
a
place to live. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
The family came and it was mom and dad.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And then there are the two brothers.
Okay.
Tamerlan is the oldest child of four. Okay. There are two sisters in the middle.
And then there's the
Zokar.
Well, he's 19 at the time.
Yeah, is the youngest of the four children.
Okay.
And so they've lived in this area for a decade.
So Tamerlan would have been like an older teenager when they came.
Yeah, he would have been, 14, 15, right? Something like that.
Okay. So how did was it just the two brothers that became radicalized or was it the entire family? What happened?
One of the things that happened is, of course, they think that they're going to come to America and live the American dream and everything's going to work out. And they've seen the American dream played out in movies. And so they think it's going to happen to them.
Sure.
There are pictures of the family when they moved here or years before these events took place. And they look just like the three of us, the way they dressed. They're on vacation, t-shirts and blue jeans, just a normal day in America. And then as the story progresses, you start to see the mother. She starts to wear the head scarf.
Okay.
Not the complete. She's covering her head. She's not covering her face. She's covering her head.
Okay. So is that the more conservative version of the Muslim religion?
Yeah.
So they become a little more conservative, I guess, when they get over here.
That's right.
Okay. For whatever reason.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Tamerlan I told you he's a boxer.
Okay.
And he has this dream that he's going to make the Olympic team. He was a really good boxer.
Okay.
He's very good. He had dreams of making the U.S. Olympic team. And right before I think it would have been the 2010 or the 2012 Summer Games. I forget which year they had Summer Games.
Mm-hmm. We could do the math, but I will.
I don't know.
But there was a rule change, and you had to be an American citizen to be on the Olympic team.
I was before that, ask you had you, not. Are you they citizens? Okay.
Zokar eventually became a citizen, but Tamerlan, the older brother, did not.
Okay.
Maybe he didn't have time to become a citizen ahead of the Olympics that he had hoped to qualify for. Anyway, he becomes disillusioned.
So by the time he's able to qualify, he is not an American citizen.
Right.
And they say you cannot compete because you are not an American citizen.
That's right.
I don't hate that rule.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of agree with it.
But
if
you've been in the country for 10 years, why not become a citizen?
That would be my question.
It's not that
why
hard.
Are you not a citizen by now? You've lived here for 10 years.
Right.
You want to compete on our team. So become a team member.
Yeah. So
become a citizen.
He's disillusioned.
I don't get that.
And so according to the documentary, he leans on his religion to assuage his anger. He becomes a more devout Muslim.
Oh, okay. All right. I mean,
and it's hard to tie. Even the documentary struggles with trying to tie his religion to his activities at the Boston Marathon and in Watertown.
Because Islam is not it's a peaceful religion. It doesn't teach these practices.
Right.
It's whatever this radicalization is that
he
gets,
leans
like,
on a more radical version of his religion.
He blames America for not being able to be a boxer on the Olympic team.
Okay.
And just about the time that Zokar turns 18, mom and dad get divorced. So the American dream has flopped.
It's broken their face.
So it's obviously America's fault that
That's
he
right.
didn't become a citizen
yeah.
and his parents got divorced.
Yeah. yeah. Not trying to justify anything, just trying to explain it maybe a little
bit. But you see the rationality there and the fact that there is none.
The irrational rationality.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
yes. yes. So that's where.
So he's
where
become part of this radicalized conservative Muslim group that hates America, and so now we are a terrorist. He becomes a terrorist.
That's it. Yeah. And it's there's. I don't.
And we bring little brother with us.
Right. I don't understand how it must have been several weeks or months in the planning of the Boston Marathon bombing, because I think I mentioned last week that they used a recipe for pressure cooker bombs that they found in a radical Islamic magazine that encourages people around the world to commit jihad for want of a better term against just to go out and blow things up.
Yeah.
If
do you want to be a terrorist?
Not,
read this article.
Yeah. I mean, this branch of this branch of Islam. Yeah. If you're not with us, you're against us, and we.
Yeah, and we hate everybody but ourselves.
And we hate you.
So,
and kaboom, who cares?
yeah, we don't care. So this is a
So we've got this. We've got one black hat is Tamerlan Tsarnaev. He's dead in the hospital.
He's dead because white hat ran him over.
That's right.
So, do we know about the shots? Like, was he shot? Like, what's the deal with that?
I don't know.
Okay,
I don't know. The guy said in the documentary, I shot him 9 times and he never went down. And he was a firearms instructor for the police department.
So you're thinking, did he have on a bulletproof vest or?
I don't think so.
Wow.
Just adrenaline. Maybe he missed. And so I've mentioned before, we've got this unprecedented nationwide manhunt is underway now because Zokar Tsarnaev has disappeared.
White hat.
Mm-hmm. He's gone into the night.
Have they contacted their family at this point? Once they identified who Black Hat was.
Yeah, there's an interview in the documentary. Some journalists found them. They were back in they're back in Asia.
Oh, they've moved home.
Mom and dad have gotten divorced and they've both moved back.
Oh. Okay.
So there's
a twist.
There's an interview with each of them separately where they say, mom says, I don't think my children did this.
As a mother would.
Oh yeah. It'd be very hard to.
And they already know that Tamerlan is dead. And dad says, let's make sure we get Zokar. Let's capture him alive. Let's give him a fair shot. Let's make sure that you guys have got your information straight because I don't think my son did it.
Mm-hmm. So he's given a little more information than mom. Mom's probably very distraught. Mm-hmm. And then dad's kind of trying to be rational a little bit and say,
can we keep one son alive?
Let's keep one alive so we know what's happened here.
Exactly.
Okay.
So now we've got 2,500 police officers headed for Watertown.
Okay.
Overnight. It's early in the morning. It's 1, 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. By 5:30, 6 o'clock that morning, the decision is made, and it comes from the governor's office, or maybe even higher, that they're going to shut down the city of Boston. Now, you can't shut down the city of Boston. No. What they do is they request that everybody, what is the phrase? Shelter in place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of like with COVID, shelter in place is
it's voluntary. They can't, they're going to shut down. They're going to shut down.
Probably all the government spaces and public spaces.
Yeah, they're gonna shut down the city bus system because that may be a way for him to escape. They're gonna shut down
the train.
The trains. Is it the subway? Is it the T in Boston?
I don't know.
I think it's the T.
You're the only one who's been.
I know, and I should know. I went blank. It's not the L. That's Chicago.
Yeah, I know
it's
that.
It's the T. Mm-hmm. in Boston.
Okay. I know Atlanta is MARTA.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then
that's right.
DC is.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, I don't remember.
Metro.
The Metro.
The Metro, it yes. The I've metro. Been to yeah. DC, but I didn't ride the Metro. I've rode the subway in New York.
Yeah.
Not successfully. I was always going the wrong way.
Not successfully.
Ended up in Queens one time, was not trying to go to Queens.
One day I got on, I got separated from the other guys went to do something and I was by myself for 2 or 3 hours. And so I just went and got on the subway mm-hmm. and just rode.
And this yeah. was in Boston?
No, this was when I did this, it was in New York City.
Oh, in New York.
I just rode just to see, you know, I'd never seen a, mm-hmm. a place as busy and crazy and crowded as New York City before. So I just sat by the window for an hour and watched and then I got off and got on the other side and came back.
Wow.
It was neat.
Yeah.
So they've shut down the buses. They've shut down the T.
Okay.
Boston is a ghost town. Everybody decides to go along. Everybody's shelters in
sure,
place.
Sure. You're probably
terrified. We've got a terrorist on the loose yeah. in Boston.
The cops need the streets.
It could be anywhere.
So everybody, I mean, it's a ghost town. There's nobody there on
and then
Friday.
Pictures of their faces are just all over the news. Everywhere. It's, you know, I remember this.
Yeah. So this takes all afternoon. This search is going on. They've searched Watertown. They're going house to house. Mm-hmm. Thousands of police officers knocking on doors, going into people's backyards, asking them, interviewing them at the door. Don't open the door for anybody except a properly identified police officer.
Correct.
So they're just about finished with this door-to-door search in Watertown. At 6 o'clock, President Obama calls Deval Patrick, who is the governor of Massachusetts, and says, look, you can't shut down an entire metropolitan area for an undetermined amount of time. Tell everybody the shelter in place has to stop. Mm-hmm. Now, it's probable that everybody's going to continue to abide by the shelter in place request, in which most people do. Oh. But just officially, you can't do that. You know, you're worried about civil rights and, you know, there's certain things that you can and you can't do. And it was a request from the governor for the shelter in place. So nothing official.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's not martial law.
Gotcha.
But yeah. They're just about ready to give up on the search because they think he's gotten away. They don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And at 6:42 p.m., there's a phone call to 911. And a guy says, there's somebody in my boat.
In my boat?
And the boat is parked in the
driveway. He's got the boat
the driveway,
parked
right?
In the back of his house on the
in
driveway.
The back of his house. Okay.
And it's got this winter shrink wrap. It's wrapped up for the winter.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's a hole in it.
There's
blood.
Oh, there's someone in the boat.
He said, I looked in the boat. There's somebody in the boat.
He looked in it? Yeah. Did the guy not see him?
He did see him. He said, there's somebody in the boat. But he didn't know who it was, but everybody knows
no,
who it
I'm
is.
Talking about, did the
oh,
white hat not notice?
I guess okay. not. Well, maybe he was asleep.
Yeah,
I mean, it's 18 hours from the time he drove off in the Mercedes to the time he's discovered.
And there's blood, so maybe he's been shot?
Sure, he's been injured.
I mean, there's been
some
a shootout.
Some of those bullets on Laurel Street mm-hmm. Hit him.
Okay.
Something did. Maybe one of the bombs blew up in his hand.
Right, okay.
I mean, he's definitely bloody.
Okay.
And so the police converge around this boat
mm-hmm.
and this is what we all remember seeing on television
yep,
that day.
The
this
boat.
Is, they've found him. Something's going to happen. They're going to try to, and they're trying to get him out of the boat alive because they need him alive because they want to know how big is this terrorist cell?
We need answers.
Yeah. We want answers.
Mm-hmm.
How many more people are involved? How many more bombs are there out there? They don't know that there aren't still more bombs scattered around metropolitan Boston area. Set to go off because these pressure cooker bombs were set were detonated with their cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
They figured out some way to create an app for their cell phone, and that was how they detonated the bombs.
Good gracious!
The two bombs at the Boston Marathon, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a negotiation process that takes place. They finally get Zokar out of the boat, and he's captured alive, but he can't talk because before they got him out of the boat, at some point, somebody fired a weapon at the boat. One of the cops shot at the boat. He thought he saw something. coming out, maybe the barrel of a gun. He didn't know. But anyway, somebody fired a bullet, and then everybody started shooting at this boat. Oh. This boat had 126 bullet holes in it.
Oh, this poor guy in his boat.
So, yeah.
It's like Danny's car and...
Yeah, Danny's car and this guy's boat on Franklin Gone. Street, yeah. 67 Franklin Street. Whoever lives there is short a boat, or at least he was this day.
And don't try to ask your insurance company.
No. Nope.
It's probably not covered.
I thought about that this morning when I watched it for the third time. I watched this episode again. It's part of that three-part series. And I thought, I wonder if that guy ever got reimbursed for that boat. It's not. That's just how my mind
works.
It
just sounds like something that the insurance company would say they can't pay for.
Like, yeah. is it terrorism? Because, you know, that's always excluded.
Mm-hmm. You don't have
yeah, sure it is.
Terrorist coverage. Because so, sorry.
One of the things that Zokar did while he was in the boat for all these hours was he wrote out a sort of a manifesto in ink pen on the interior walls of the boat, in which he blamed America. Okay. You know, there were two wars going on at the time over in the Middle East, mm-hmm. Afghanistan and Iraq, I guess.
Yeah.
And predominantly Muslim countries. And so that's, you know, that was motivation for a lot of Muslim extremism mm-hmm. at the time. And that's pretty much what Zokar wrote and explained mm-hmm. on the inside of the boat. But he couldn't talk when they got him to the hospital because he had been shot in the face. Mm. When that bullet fire happened, when the gunfire happened, and so he's writing out notes, and eventually he convinced them, look, it was just me and my brother. There's no more bombs. Nobody's in danger. Mm-hmm. And so you know that it's over. They've got him. He's captured. It's over. Everybody goes back to normal. The next day is a Saturday in Boston. The Red Sox played at home. They had this big ceremony before the game mm-hmm. to thank the police officers for the crazy week that they had had. And the Red Sox went on to win that game that day. And the Red Sox went on. There was some healing that happened in the city of Boston because the Red Sox went on to win the World Series in 2013.
Oh, nice. And
they won the last game at home in Fenway. Place went nuts. I remember watching the game. It's always fun to watch the Red Sox win in Fenway.
Mm-hmm.
Or just to play. There's Sweet Caroline at the seventh inning stretch, you know, the whole thing. So some healing took place later that year. And this was the day, finally, on April the 19th, 2013, is when the healing began in the city of Boston. It's 2 years later before Zokar goes on trial. That happens in March of 2015. And there's pretty much no doubt that he's going to be found guilty. I mean, the evidence is overwhelming. It really comes down to whether or not he's going to spend the rest of his life in a maximum security prison or if he's going to be executed.
Yeah.
And eventually the trial ends with him being sentenced to death. Now that was overturned on appeal, but then the Supreme Court reinstated that death penalty in 2022.
Okay.
Currently Zokar is in the Supermax prison out in Colorado, Florence, Colorado. We've talked about that prison before because among the other people who were there, Richard, what's his name? The guy that we can all thank for having to take our shoes off when we go to the airport. Richard Reed, the shoe bomber.
Oh, shoe bomber, yeah.
He's there. Our friend Eric Robert Rudolph.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking. Yeah.
Is there. Yeah. Terry Nichols, who was involved in the Oklahoma City bombing.
Mm-hmm.
And that anniversary is coming up next year. The 25th anniversary of that. So,
is this prison in the middle of like nowhere, Colorado? Like,
yeah, it's out in the middle of nowhere in Colorado. There's a small community called Florence is the name of the community. There are, I think, 350 or so people in this prison, and it's the most secure facility. It's Alcatraz.
Mm-hmm, yeah, that's
out in the middle of nowhere
because it's kind of like another instance where if you escape, like you're not getting far.
That's right. And at least one of the prisoners, and I looked up who some of the most famous prisoners are there at in Florence, Colorado today. It's called ADX. That's administrative detention, and X means extreme, I think,
or X.
That's as secure as the facility can be.
Okay.
One of the guys who is there, and I forget his name, but he is there because he escaped from somewhere else. Mm. And that's where they put you when you when you break the rules in prison, they send you to Florence.
You go to ADX.
Yes. Okay. Ted Kaczynski is there.
Oh yeah.
The Unabomber.
Mm-hmm.
if he's still alive. This that article that I read was a couple of years old about who the.
I don't know. I'll do a quick check. See.
Yeah. Terry Nichols, I mentioned, Eric Robert Rudolph. El Chapo is was the head of one of the Mexican drug cartels that was captured a few years back, and he's there. And that's 23 hours a day in solitary confinement. You've got one.
So Ted Kaczynski died June 10th, 2023. Okay. He died last year.
All right. I thought that might be right.
So everyone there is in solitary?
That's right. I don't think anybody there ever sees anybody else. I don't think there is like there's a general population. I think you're there for 23 hours, maybe for the 1 hour that you get to exercise. But if I'm not mistaken, the exercise yard is a square about as big as this room. Mm-hmm. That is about 4 or 5 stories tall, and it's got wire mesh across the top, and you can just walk around in this little circle.
Just go in a circle.
For an hour.
Wow. Yeah, you don't really need to be sharing your bomb tips with the other bombers.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's a gin pop there where they can just congregate and discuss notes.
Yeah, one of the reasons I read this and didn't know it until this morning, one of the reasons that Julian Assange, you know, the WikiLeaks founder, one of the reasons that the court in Great Britain refused extradition requests from the United States was because he would be kept in the ADX facility. And in England, that's considered cruel and unusual punishment, solitary confinement.
Mm-hmm.
So they refused his extradition to the United States. So he's in prison in somewhere in England.
Oh, okay.
So.
That's rough. I mean, that's, you think about having to live your life like that from day to day. That is,
it's worse than Alcatraz.
There are things worse than death. You know what I mean?
At least you had a job at Alcatraz. You know, you could be could work at the library or work in the kitchen or, you know, some semblance of a daily routine.
At ADX, they're not playing. It's like, whatever you do that got you there.
Mm-hmm.
Was really horrific.
Well, it seems like people are just we do always say the world's always been on fire, but I can remember some of the people we talked about being in Alcatraz, but I don't remember them blowing up cities and, you know.
Yeah, they were just crooks and robbers and murderers back then.
And people who had escaped from other prisons, you know, so it wasn't like
terrorists. These people are all terrorists. Whether they're domestic terrorists or whatever. If you are bombing a place and killing people, like that's terrorism
really wasn't a thing in this country until the First World Trade Center bombing in 1993. And that guy is in ADX as well. I forget his name.
Still there, huh?
It's unless he's passed away. That, like I said, this article was a couple of years old.
Well, I'm glad he's not famous enough to know his name.
Yeah, me too. All right, last thing, guys. Remember I mentioned last week that I reached out to Greg Colcord.
Yes.
He was the author who wrote the book about the day he ran the Boston Marathon was the day of the bombs exploding. So he got back to me.
Oh, okay.
And said, I just asked him how that day changed his life. I wanted to get a perspective of somebody who was there. He said that to this day, he now flinches at loud noises.
Oh.
If he sees a backpack somewhere, he goes and finds a cop.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I see something, I'm going to say something. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another thing. He said he was really lucky because his wife and children were there that day, but they had been, the little boy wanted to leave. Right after dad ran across the finish line, they watched dad run across the finish line. His wife got this terrible photo that he shows in the book. And I think it's an inside joke in the family that mom missed the photo of me crossing the Boston Marathon finish line.
Yeah.
But the little boy he was ready to leave.
Mm-hmm. As children do. Your most important life moments here. Yeah. And the kid's like, all right, I'm done.
Off of the grandstands just a few minutes before the first ball went off.
Goodness me.
Greg said that since this has happened, it made him realize that your life could really change in a heartbeat, just like that. So he started checking items off of his bucket list. He went to the World Series that fall, the first time he'd ever been to a World Series game, saw the Red Sox win the World Series. And he said that he has run up the stairs of One World Trade Center. And I think there is an event, some sort of competition where you run maybe up and back down, or maybe just up, or maybe just down. But anyway, that's a thing. And he's done that. And he's also returned and run the Boston Marathon again since then.
Good for him.
It's a great book. More than I forgot the title of the book. Oh, was that Thunder? More than a Boston Marathon bombing story. Yeah. And there's one more documentary that you can check out. This is an HBO documentary. It's called Marathon, The Patriots Day Bombing. Okay. And it is a documentary that focuses on the people who lost limbs that day and on their recovery stories. Mm-hmm. Some of them returned 2 or 3 years later to run in the Boston Marathon again. And it follows them. It follows a photojournalist who took some of the famous pictures that were on the sidewalk that day after the bombs went off. Mm-hmm. And he sort of felt guilty about he felt like he'd been exploiting these people who had been horribly injured. And so he made a decision to follow a few of them and document their recovery efforts. And that plays heavily into this story that is on HBO that is Marathon, the Patriots Day Bombing. So
I bet those stories are really great.
It's an uplifting story about something terrible that happened. At least, you know, as human beings can do, we can be awful, awful, awful people sometime, but we're also violently compassionate as well.
And absolutely.
And it's a heartwarming story about recovering from something unimaginable. So that is our part two series about the bombing of the 2013 Boston Marathon.
Mm-hmm. Well, Scott, that was great.
Yes, it was
fun.
I think you did a great job on both parts.
I've got notes everywhere.
And if you guys out there listening thought Scott did a great job, say something nice to us.
Or buy me a drink the next time you see me.
Exactly.
At Easy Street.
Give us a 5-star rating. Go to Spotify and leave a comment or visit our website, truecrimeoneasystreet.com. What else?
Is there anything else? Is that it? Good night, everybody.